Welcome to Have You Heard, where we talk about issues at the intersection of agriculture and engineering. Let's get started. Here are your hosts, Morgan Hayes and Josh Jackson.
Welcome. This is the Have You Heard podcast. This is episode 34. We're going to talk today about reseeding and overseeding pastures, just pasture renovations that we would typically do here in the fall. I'm Morgan Hayes. I'm an assistant professor in biosystems and ag engineering at the University of Kentucky, focusing on livestock facilities and in my personal life. My husband and I farm in Boyle County, Kentucky, about 500 acres. It's a commercial cattle and hay operation.
I'm Josh Jackson, assistant professor in agriculture and biological engineering, focusing on precision livestock farming, and my family focuses on raising, registering as cattle, and hay production.
Okay, Josh. So before we get into the reseeding topic, which is sort of on the planning front right now, let's talk a little bit about what's been happening on the farms this week, and just in general here in the state, maybe a little bit.
So we had a certain amount of rainfall here lately. So East Kentucky saw the brunt of it, seemed like, and so they had some flooding out there. We've been having to do some bush hogging. So we're doing some bush hogging. We went ahead and treated those cows with the E. coli shot. And still working on repairing equipment and also getting ready to move cows. So our fall herd moves home within the next 2 weeks because, you know, they can come 2 or 3 weeks early potentially. So trying to get ready to move them all home and also get ready for taking the sheep and some goats down to state fair.
Yeah, you've had your son and then you've got a nephew and a niece that have been showing the lambs. How's that been going?
It's been going fairly well. It's going fairly well. They love the lambs. They have a lot of fun with the lambs. They have some high quality lambs. It's just sometimes the showmanship is there. Sometimes they just get distracted and look off. You know, go.
It's all part of the experience.
It's all part of the experience. So yeah. they're you know, 3 to 7. So that's kind of what you get.
Yeah. That's awesome. I'm pretty sure that you've told me that the three-year-old has the best focus of the group.
The three-year-old has the best focus. She gets out there and she just does. And the other two, you're just like, well, what are you doing? We just went over what to do. She's steady as a rock. The other two is like, it's whatever distractions are around.
That's right. I actually almost wish I had come to see the last show with you. It's always such a good story when you talk about them. I can appreciate, since I have a small child as well, just how distracted they can be. But that's also probably quite a bit of work. Just the logistics of managing and getting both children and animals to a show like that.
Most of it's probably the children, I think.
You know, yeah.
Just getting, I'm used to the lamb. I could do it in my sleep just about. But I used to take, we always took like 10 cows, state fair, 6 sheep, and pigs. So we always have logistics. That part of logistics down. It's usually just the kids is the most difficult part.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is a challenge. So I believe you.
So we're just taking the 3 sheep and a couple goats. Like, it's nothing.
There you go. That'll be good though. And when you're showing the goats, are they goats that you would typically be having on your farm anyway, or do you have some?
It's the goats like the team, like my sister-in-law raised herself.
Okay. So. Some of her own genetics then, huh?
Yep, some of her own. She's just really proud of them. So the kids, you know, it's a good project for them because it helps build confidence and they can't do too much damage to a sheep or goat, I hope. Not without them at least giving
damage back.
Yes.
Fair amounts of damage both directions. That sounds like a great thing. And, you know, I think that is really a really good experience for anyone that, you know, has younger kids. The 4-H showing is, I think, an excellent opportunity for them to.
I'm a huge proponent because we have them doing that. We have them doing some of the starting out for some of the skill-a-thon aspects as well. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really, really good thing, building experience for them. I'm a huge proponent.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing as well. So on my farm this week, no goat or sheep showing. But
I'll pack them.
Maybe. Well, you know, I had, this is off topic, but I had a friend send me a TikTok video of someone doing like agility with llamas. And they said, I think your son could do this. And I said, yes, they actually do competitions on like obedience agility with your alpacas. So we could go, you know, you have to go over the little jumps and go in the circles and It's not quite to the level that you would see with like a working dog doing that kind of agility course. Like they don't go through the tunnel necessarily, but
off leash, on leash.
Usually they're on a lead, but you're not supposed to pull. You're supposed to allow them to do the course. You're supposed to go with them across the course, but allow them to actually perform the tasks within there. I mean, sometimes you literally have to take them over, like manhandle them. But if you know anything about small ruminants, it's very hard to manhandle anyone into doing anything. Yes. They basically just sit down and lay on the ground and they don't move then. It's not pretty. So it's possible you will see us doing that one day. It's also possible I decide that is so painful for my mental well-being that we can't do that one day. And I wouldn't mind having sheep. I actually would like to have sheep one day. So
they're not bad.
I see it in the future, but not this year.
Maybe 5 years from now future.
Well, I don't know. My son's 2, so I would say probably in 2 years or so.
Yeah. I think you can show it state fair when you're 5. They've changed it up over the years. 3 to 5 is kind of what they
typically
settle on.
So anyway, that's in the future, but not currently. Big things that happened this week. We did get we had some bred cows that we were looking to sell and we sold them.
Excellent.
And got them off the farm. That was good. Other than that, we've been doing some bush hogging, some work on some other like family projects on the farm. Had a dog who has all kinds of dog issues this week, which just, you know, personal life getting in the way of farming and farming getting in the way of personal life. And aside from that, we're really just getting ready for fall calving. Similar to you, we are about 2 weeks out at this point from fall calving. Just making sure we have all of our groups sort of accounted for. Getting those cows sold was key because we didn't want to move them with calves on side if we didn't have to.
Right.
And they're starting to bag down. So it was currently, we're in the short stages where we need to move them now before it gets too late to move them. So
you guys do any E. coli shots or anything like that? Or
we don't. We have considered doing it, especially for our spring group of heifers.
Okay.
But our fall herd, we've never had issues with it. Now, this is an interesting year because we were so dry for so long, and it's now getting wet. I don't know if we're going to have some issues, but we've done pretty good on our rotations. We have pretty good grass cover. I think typically I expect to see more issues with calves in the spring with the mud and the cold. And it's so warm right now that I think as long as they get on the ground and dry and clean,
should be fine.
They should be okay. But certainly we've seen it. We've seen scours before in our calves. We just don't typically see it in our fall group.
Okay. And we had 1 year, many years ago, where we had some issues. And so we decided, but ours are a little more concentrated. We keep them more concentrated. And then we went to the Sand Hills calving system to kind of move around, but still we just wanted to be on the safe side. If we can not touch an animal.
Absolutely.
That's our main goal, is just to have that additional security, hopefully, of not being a little more resilient from a calf standpoint.
And the other thing I'd say is that, you know, you didn't touch on this, but we're pulling our bulls here in a week.
Yep.
So we'll have one bull that we're going to sell. That's our calving ease bull for heifers. Just because we actually aren't bringing in any heifers into our fall cycle. We're currently, because of how many animals we have that have calves right now, or in the process of having calves in the next 2 months, we actually don't want to grow that number. We actually expect it to shrink a little bit, but we've had, the last 2 years, we had 100%. What was it, 90, above 95% this last year. We've anticipated and held heifers to bring into this group multiple times now, so to make sure that we get our numbers where they need to be to match the farm sizes, we're not bringing in any heifers, and it doesn't make sense to overwinter a bull for an extra year. We're just going to look to sell him because prices are still pretty strong on larger animals right now, and then repurchase a calving ease bull maybe in the spring.
We're actually pulling our bull here once we move with fall cows home.
Yeah.
We pretty much pull the bull off the spring and then move them to another farm.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan. So lots happening on the farm. lots of grass growing again, which is a positive here. And
it's amazing. What a little bit of rain you do.
Yeah, it's been very good for us. But I really feel for the people in Eastern Kentucky. I have some extended family there that lost homes, and been doing some projects out at Quicksand at the research station, our cars, and that's not looking good either. And
it's not a good time for research station, or, you know.
No. A lot of prayers for a lot of families. It's really a tough time. And a lot of we talked a lot about the tornado when it happened, and but the flooding from an insurance standpoint is even tougher, I think, for a lot of people to get any money back. Yes. They don't have a lot of good flood protection insurances, and some of these areas are particularly not known for having a lot of economic assets, and getting people back into these smaller towns is going to be the towns may never recover. But anyway, that's just a little depressing for everyone this morning. I'm just struggling with processing how many people there don't have homes right now.
Right. It's definitely, and it seemed like unlike tornado, they thought they were okay. And then it just turned out not to be true, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't anticipate how bad it was going to be.
Yeah. Not a lot of warning that was coming. A lot of people, I think, woke up and were in shock if they were able to get out at all. So,
yeah.
It's a lot. And certainly for people that farm in that region, really difficult to come back from this. I mean, it's very hard to figure out, one, if your animals survived in the first place, where they are now, how you keep them contained there. A lot of your areas that were your better areas for grass and things like that would have been lower-lying areas that have flooded. And there's a pretty long wait time before you're going to be able to get them back into the areas where you expected to keep them. A lot of people store hay in those lower-lying areas, so their winter reserves are also flooded.
Definitely a challenge.
Definitely a challenge. So lots of concerns in Eastern Kentucky right now. With that, we have to still keep moving forward on our farms, and our topic today is reseeding, overseeding our fall pasture management, I guess, if I want to describe it as a project. Do you have any plans for what you're going to do?
So we have a 20-acre hay field that we had tried replanting last year. Things happened with the planter, this and that. So we're going to replant that is one. So probably one of our goals would be going there with orchard grass fescue mix. And we'll probably end up using, we have our own seed drill, but we got to do some maintenance on it. And we'll probably go back in and just get the counties and use that to drill it in. Plus it's a little wider, won't take as long.
Right.
So that'll be one of our goals, is to renovate. So spray down and renovate one of our hay fields.
Is there anything you're trying to get rid of in that field currently?
The current makeup is everything. Everything in that field. Because, we went in there. That's the field we had done a lot with our forage soybeans. Mm-hmm. And just fine with all the difficulties of getting somebody out there with a sprayer in the spring, getting this and that. So we decided that maybe be more cost effective just to put it into grass.
Into a perennial grass.
Yep. And then just instead of spending the money on seed, spend that money on fertilizer.
Okay.
Was our goal. And so everything that's out there, it's just a weed. Okay. Everything, because we didn't do anything with it this year, so it's just weeds. So pretty much go in there, burn that down with 240 or something, 240 probably, and then just replant.
Okay. That sounds like still a pretty significant undertaking. Sort of similar to you, we try not to work on too many fields in the fall if we can help it, because the windows can be tricky for this. I typically, and I don't know how other people feel about this, but I like to get everything in the ground in September. Ideally, we do early September, but sometimes with second cuttings of hay and other things, we end up at the end of September before we get in there. And I don't like to put a lot in the ground if I don't know it's going to rain.
Yes.
So trying to hit it and time it so that we know we're putting something in the ground and we're going to get rain on it in the next week after that, or at least the next week-ish after that, to give it a chance to come up is sort of key. Sometimes with hurricanes, we get weather patterns and we can say, oh, we're going to get a couple rainstorms in the next couple weeks. And that's like a prime time to try and get seed in the ground. We have one field that is more on the summer perennials, not annuals. So it's got some more warm season grasses in it. But what we found is that it's surrounded by cornfields and grain fields, and that don't get great cover necessarily applied to them. And so we get a lot of weed pressure in the spring. So this year we're going to drill or we're going to overseed some wheat.
Okay.
Not necessarily looking for wheat as a crop, but just looking for some cover for the cool season. And then ideally we will do a very early hay cutting off of that and allow those warm seasons to come up. And that wheat is not the best nutritious grass, but it's a really nice one that we found, at least, to start our calves on in the barn.
Yep.
So anytime we wean any animals, it's a sweet, dry feed for them so that they're more palatable.
Also, if we get it up dry.
We do have trouble getting it up dry.
Okay. It's like getting up dry.
We do, because we have a bine, we can process it and we can get it up dry as long as we get a window. And the other benefit is we can typically come in a little earlier on it than we would on a fescue grass. So like rather than we're waiting till around Memorial Day-ish, we can usually target early May. So we can be looking for an earlier window than we might otherwise be looking for. So that's sort of a thought process. So we're going to put wheat in that field. That's about between a 15 and 20 acre field. The other field we have that was sort of on our agenda, but is going to get pushed back a year, is we have one of our hay fields that's currently in clover and orchard grass. We were very nervous. I think I mentioned this. We did second cutting very early on that field because the orchard grass looked like it was really drying up aggressively, but it has recovered.
Okay.
The rain, it has come back. You can still see where it burnt itself out a little bit, but it's doing okay. So we're going to give it another year. In talking to some of our forage extension folks, they suggested that it probably, in theory, an orchard grass field would only have about 4 years of life in it before it started to fail, not necessarily fully, but not be quite as strong a stand. And we're 3 years in, so we thought maybe by doing that early cutting, we might kill it off and have to reseed this fall, but it looks like it's going to
keep on going.
And with the amount of clover we have in there pushing nitrogen at it, as it starts to nodulate and stuff, yeah. Hopefully we'll get that fourth year out of it and we'll have to evaluate next fall. Okay. But that means we only have one field to do this fall instead of two, which is definitely better in light of how busy our fall already looks.
You know, like it. In some years, we've actually, like this has been a while ago, we've actually planted our alfalfa in August. But it was dry. We knew it was going to be dry. And the ground was hard, so we wanted it shallow. So we put our drill down as hard as it would go. And so it still just skimmed the surface. But it had a decent cover, and we just waited for those rains to come. So we were hoping for it wasn't a shallow, just a dew. We were hoping for the actual rain.
Right.
And then it actually, you know, took off that next year.
Yeah.
So sometimes we kind of try to play a little bit. We'll plant early, hoping if it's really dry, go ahead and put it in the ground because it's not getting wet anyway.
Right.
And then we'll just kind of hedge our bets and hope that it doesn't rain, then dry up again.
Right.
Yeah. That's our biggest fear. It's just if it rains and dries up again, then we're out of luck.
Yep. That's always the challenge. The fall season is a little tricky around Kentucky because we know we get rain, but we don't know when and how much and how consistently it'll come. Of course, most of the summer was that way around here. So
then, you know, you have, what was it, September 2018, where you had pretty much the whole month there was raining. Mm-hmm. And so you had 10 inches of rainfall that month. And you had September 2019, where you got, I think the record amount was 0.03 hundredths or 0.3 across the state, 0.03 inches across the entire state for rainfall. So we had the driest September's on record. Back to back,
yeah. And in 2019 is actually when we planted our clover orchard, and we planted it at the very end of September, knowing that there were two hurricanes that were projected, and that was a very big gamble. It was the only way we were going to get it in the ground was to put it in when we did, but we put it in on like the 30th of September, and we ended up getting two rains the first 2 weeks of October. not huge rains, but enough to get that out of the ground and to change the weather pattern that we were sitting in.
Yep.
Which was a huge relief. One, that we invested all that money in seed and it came up, and two, it was on a cost share project, so we had to get it in the ground.
Yeah.
To meet our timing goals.
Yeah, because sometimes when you get those dry patterns, you almost need something like a hurricane to break it up, because once it gets dry, then it kind of just propagates itself almost.
Exactly. So anyway, those are our plans. I don't think anything too dramatic by us this fall or in the near future, but I know some people that are doing some pretty aggressive renovations. But also I know that the corn and bean prices play a big role in who chooses to change fields from crop back into pasture and pasture back into crop. So
yep.
See a little bit going both ways right now, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, prices have fluctuated. I think a lot of people are just kind of waiting to see. They're shipping grain out of Ukraine. Started to ship grain out of Ukraine now, so maybe. We're still waiting to see how the market reacts and if it's a stable long-term solution.
Yep.
Stable. But on our farm, we're going to do, we'd like to get rid of some buttercup. I think that's something we have to get rid of, try to get rid of, start getting rid of in the fall. 240, I believe, or some other products. We'll have to do a little more research on. And then we'll do a couple of fields, like our sacrifice patch. We'll get a little bit of fescue.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully we'll see what grows and what can be there next year.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan. And part of it, I think, for us is just the mechanical cutting, just getting everything bush hogged really well here in August gives us a better handle on our fall weeds to allow our grasses to maybe thrive a little more as we get back into that cool season, coming out of that dip back into some growth,
those
cooler season grasses. So that's the plan for now. What's on the agenda for next week though, Josh?
So like I kind of alluded to earlier, we're going to be moving some cows. You know, we're thinking about cutting hay, try to get everything ready to go, but I think the forecast is going to be potentially rainfall for the entire week. So probably just a little bit of a holding pattern, but we got plenty of repairs to do and work on. So, we have to move cows. So that will still take place.
Yeah, we have fortunately, no animals that have to move. We're currently making our plans for where we're going to winter animals. So, and how to utilize the grass on those pastures effectively and when to move some of those groups around. With selling off 7 of the animals on the one farm, it's understocked currently. But my other farm that I have animals on, we'll trade back and forth those animal numbers to get them to balance. But making sure that we can utilize the pastures effectively is still a key to that process. Getting ready to start calving, of course, and pull those bulls out continues to be like it's just like a logistics puzzle.
Yes.
And we have hay that we're ready to cut. And ideally we do very little square hay, but this will be a square cutting.
Okay.
If we can get the windows to open up right. But like you said, we went from a very dry pattern for a number of weeks to a very wet pattern here. And so we're just sort of waiting to see if we have a comfortable window to get that done.
Right.
So it may be in the next week, or it might be in 2 weeks from now, or it might be 4 weeks from now, but it's coming at some point here whenever the window opens up.
Whenever it opens up, I think everybody's going to be cutting hay.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, I don't know. Some people got, I actually watched someone cut hay and I didn't know why, because I knew there was rain coming the next day. So some people are just cutting as they see fit. But also I think some people really got hit harder based upon how they manage their fields. And they don't necessarily have enough growth back underneath it yet to do a second cutting. But I think anyone who cut in May or the first week or so of June has probably got enough grass to be ready to do second cutting. Or just about there. So, and from a maturity, they're certainly there.
Yeah.
So, and that's what's happening on the farms. And we will see you guys next week with another podcast.
All right. Thanks.
Have You Heard is a production of the University of Kentucky College of Agriculture, Food and Environment, along with the Department of Biosystems and Agricultural Engineering. Discover what's wildly possible at ca.uky.edu.